You're tuned in to Nerd Overload, your weekly show for video games, movies, TV shows, comics, tech news, and more. Now your hosts, Cody Pinnick, Samantha Cross, Sam Dunham, and Josh Harrison.
Hey everybody, welcome to Nerd Overload, the pop and geek culture show that's for good little boys and girls of all ages. I'm Cody.
I'm Sam.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Samantha.
Oh boy, we have a great show for you this week. Thank you all for tuning in. We have a bunch of news to go over, but first, let's talk about some things we have been checking out.
Let me get through the Outer Worlds first.
Okay, let's talk about
I'm very
Outer
excited about the Outer Worlds.
Yeah, let's
calm
do it.
Down.
You can't contain yourself.
I know. It's a new game by Obsidian, the people who made Fallout New Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very much in the vein of that. It's that old kind of, I don't know, open world's not really the right word, but an RPG with a lot of dialogue choices and gun shooty in space, in kind of a weird Western colony space where everything's run by corporations and they're out of control.
It looks like it has like kind of like almost like a 50s aesthetic, like 50s retro sci-fi aesthetic kind of.
It sometimes it goes a little older than that too, like a Wild West company town
kind of
thing.
Yeah.
Definitely has some things to say about capitalism.
I've heard that. Yeah. I've heard that this game is also, it's Fallout, but it works. Like not a broken game like most Fallout games.
Yeah, I haven't gotten any like glitches or anything. I mean, it very much is in that exact same vein as the Bethesda Fallout and Elder Scrolls.
I mean, Obsidian is Bethesda's like side kind of company
thing. They used to be. They don't. Bethesda got real jealous when people liked New Vegas more than their Fallout games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, New Vegas was a good game.
It was. That's the thing, is like this game has good writing. Like the writing is very good, the story is very compelling, and all the characters are interesting, and it works.
Yeah, see, that's the biggest thing. It works.
Like the one thing I've noticed about Obsidian games, when they're allowed to actually work on something without too much interference, they make generally pretty good games.
Yeah.
I like Knights of the Republic 2, but you could definitely tell where the interference was.
Yeah. And Alpha Protocol.
Oh, yeah.
That game is actually really good if you can get past the kind of blemishes it has. It's a really compelling, like, spy adventure. But Outer Worlds is so good. I have actually already finished it.
Wow.
I've heard it's not very good, but it has a lot. Or not very good. Not very good.
What?
Wait, sorry. Not very long.
I played it about 24, 25 hours total, it said.
But it has, like, it's got enough substance to it that it feels like it's like you got your money's worth.
Yeah. And I didn't do all the side quests. I did all the companion side quests, but I didn't do every single side quest.
Yeah.
And part of me kind of still wants to go back and do those.
Yeah.
Too.
And I like that this doesn't have like day one DLC. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have like an evergreen, at least at the outset, it doesn't have like an evergreen kind of like monetization. It doesn't have loot boxes.
Yeah.
Like it's just the game.
Don't put it out in the universe.
Well, I mean, we know it's going to eventually, but like,
well, they haven't said anything.
Well, true. That's a good point.
I would snap up a DLC in a second.
Yeah. I honestly miss the days of companies just putting out games.
A game. Yeah.
Yeah.
A finished game.
That is, yeah, I agree.
And I mean, it does a lot of stuff that the older Fallouts and stuff did that weren't so great. Like when you're in a dialogue, the camera just snaps onto their face and doesn't change angles in any kind of interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not like an Old Republic MMO style where it's more like a cinematic versus like just staring at somebody's dead eyes.
Yeah, it's definitely just snapping onto their face and looking them in their dead eyes.
Yeah. I also heard this game's really funny. Like,
oh,
it's
yeah,
got
it
a lot of humor in it.
It does. A lot of the poking fun at corporate culture and just generally like regularly funny character moments when you get to know the different crew members you get on your ship.
Yeah.
The one that Ashley Birch plays, she's the first one you get and also the best one that you get.
Well, sure. Okay. Yeah. It's Ashley Birch.
Yeah.
Of course.
She's just like a good-hearted kind of naive mechanic girl that just wants to do right by everybody and is also an asexual lesbian.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least bisexual.
I think I read an article about that.
her whole companion quest is hooking her up with one of the head mechanics on one of the colony ships.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you go around and you get her, like, different stuff to give to her on a date, and, like, it's really cute and fun.
But she's not interested in her, like, in a physical way. It's, like, definitely, like, a romantic way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And they talk about how she's going to deal with that and what the other lady's going to think and how should she approach it. And it's just, the writing is so good.
See, that's excellent. That's really cool.
You can even tell her, yeah, I'm that way too.
Huh.
Which I did, because there's no romance option in the game. So it made the most sense.
Yeah. So why not? Okay. Yeah.
I mean, at least you're not like Commander Shepard and, like, you know, just laying out a bed of roses across the galaxy.
Where are the blue women at? But yeah, don't go into the Outer Worlds thinking it's going to reinvent the wheel, but do go in there expecting a well-written Fallout-style experience in space.
That
like,
works.
Like, I love games that just kind of come out of almost nowhere and just, like, sweep of being, like, held up like, man, this game is really, really good.
Yeah. Because there wasn't really much hype for this, like, not prior to its release. I mean, like, I heard about it, but I hadn't really...
a trailer for it from E3 last year, and the idea of it had me slightly excited. I was like, oh, that looks cool. And then I kind of forgot about it for a while. And then really close to when it was getting ready to get released, I started seeing ads for it again. I was like, oh, yeah, that game. Then I kept confusing it with the other sort of...
the Outer Wilds.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of unfortunate for the Outer Wilds, really.
Yeah.
Well, both, really. Because you get confused on which one.
Both of them are supposed to be really good.
Outer Wilds, from what I've seen, is really good, too.
It's just a completely different space sci-fi game.
I played it, and it kind of bounced right off of it, and I need to go back and give it another shot, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the normal mode might be a little too easy, also.
Oh, really?
Because, like, once you level up and you get a gun that you've tinkered out to be super powerful, like, I walk through the last 2 hours of the game with my corrosive pistol.
Melting people's faces off.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
It does have, like, a super hard difficulty where, like, you have to sleep and you have to eat and drink.
Oh, wow. It's like a Fallout survival mode.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, and it doesn't sound any fun.
Like, this game sounds like it scratches the right kind of itches for me as far as, like, gameplay and thematics.
Just get Game Pass.
Yeah.
You can get it for $1. You can play through this game in a couple weeks. Not that you shouldn't buy the game, because it's really good.
Yeah, and, support, like, the developer.
Support the developer. But if you're really chomping at the bit to get at this game and you don't got the money, that is a great option.
Especially since, you know, you can use Xbox Game Pass on a computer.
Yeah.
That's right.
And honestly, Game Pass is super worth it. It's only $15 and you get it on PC and Xbox.
Oh, that's not bad.
And, like, I think I've owned an Xbox One for, I don't know, 6 months now, and I've bought one game for it because of Game Pass, and it was a used copy of Rare Replay, which was later added to Game Pass anyway. Like, it's totally worth the $15. Okay, it's a really cool service.
Huh.
I haven't played with the PC stuff because my computer sucks, but I'm sure that's probably pretty good too.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, well, hey, let's move on and let's talk about a thing that, Cody, this is something that, and Samantha, we watched this, not, like, together, but, like, you know, we watched it.
No, they don't need to know that. Well, we can think we all watched it together.
We could, you know what? I take that back. We all watched it together.
We did in spirit.
Exactly. So there was a movie that came on Netflix here, a week or two ago, I think it was?
2 weeks ago,
Called Dolomite Is My Name, and it is a like a semi-fictional, semi-biographical film about Rudy Ray Moore, a stand-up comedian and blaxploitation superstar with his persona Dolomite, starring Eddie Murphy. We talked about the announcement for this about a month or two ago.
Oh, yeah, we went real deep on it then.
Yeah, and we're going to go real deep on it again because that movie's amazing.
Yeah, oh yeah. It lived up to everything I hoped it would be.
Same.
And more.
Same, yes. So a little bit of history. We've known about Rudy Ray Moore for a little while, I'd say.
I want to say, like, my entire friendship with you guys.
Yeah. I mean, we found the Human Tornado in high school, didn't we?
So I remember us all watching it in your basement.
Yes.
Maybe more than once.
Maybe more than, multiple times. Yeah. Yeah. And it was, it's interesting because it's kind of like Shaft. It's in that vein of, you know, blaxploitation films, but The twist is it's also a comedy, and part of it is intentional comedy. Part of it's not.
Yeah.
Most of it's not.
This movie reminded me a lot of The Disaster Artist, but a lot better.
There's a good reason for that. Well, it actually reminded me a lot of Ed Wood. And yeah. That's because the producers and writers from Ed Wood, the Tim Burton.
Not Tim Burton, but the other people that were on
right,
Ed Wood.
The other ones, yeah. They wrote and produced this one as well. And it was, it hits just about every, major story beat. And there isn't like a lot of adversarial kind of, conflict. There's no conflict in the movie, really. It's just kind of Rudy Ray Moore starting from, and it picks up like pretty, I don't want to say late in his life, but like he's middle-aged by the time the movie starts. It's not like a Ray situation or anything like that. Like
where it goes through like his early life and all that whatnot.
Right. Like the movie opens, he's working in a record store. He's already been in the USO and he's been a dancer and an MC. And it's when he creates the Dolomite persona.
It's basically when he hits his stride.
It really hits his stride.
Well,
and
he wouldn't want it to go into his past.
Yeah.
Because he didn't like talking about
it. He was very guarded. It was probably the only like serious part of the movie is him, like the couple of points where he goes, yeah, I don't talk about my history with anything. And
but they hint at it just enough.
Just enough.
The movie that dramatic oomph.
Yeah.
That makes it carry more than a Disaster Artist does.
But so the movie goes through his creation of the Dolomite character and, his rise to fame, creating under like records, comedy records that he would have to sell under the counter of his record store
or out of the trunk of
the trunk of his car. Him going on the road, him discovering Lady Reed, which I knew a little bit about, but I guess I didn't realize it was. And I mean, part of it might have been partially fictionalized, but like I didn't realize that, he pretty much found and helped create her career. And it ends with him going through and creating the movie. And it ends at the premiere for his movie.
For Dolomite is My Name.
For Dolomite.
Yeah.
Although,
Dolomite is My Name is the line.
They use from Human Tornado. Almost exclusively.
Yeah, because Human Tornado is the comedy. Yeah. Dolomite was his, he was trying to make a serious
film.
Human Tornado was the comedy.
Oh, like Keegle, Mike, and Key as the writer for the movie.
So good.
He's so funny.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great. Wesley Snipes is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
As the super ego maniac.
He stole the show from Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
But Eddie Murphy is also just fantastic in this movie.
You know what? He's doing a riff on Rudy Ray Moore without being fully Rudy Ray Moore because he's Eddie Murphy. You're not going to, no matter how immersed, like how much he gets into the role, you're not going to look at him and go, oh, wow, I didn't realize that was Eddie Murphy. No.
But he plays Rudy Ray Moore without making him into a cartoon character, which would have been so easy to do.
Oh, it's difficult because Rudy Ray Moore was himself a cartoon character. Like it is, it's like a believable semi, like there's just the slightest touch of like magical realism to this movie, but it's almost completely like realistic. And from the digging that I've done into Rudy Ray Moore, outside of the film, it was pretty close to the way it kind of happened. I mean, he had a little bit more, it was a little more serious, maybe a little more egotistical when it came to things. I mean, they kind of present Rudy Ray as like everyone's best friend who's just trying to put on a show, but
he's the Kermit the Frog.
He really is. It really is like the Muppet Show kind of a little bit like,
oh yeah, when they're shooting the movie and there's so many different people there, the college kids, the cinematography and
they got that exactly right with the Dumar Hotel. He lived in that rundown hotel. Like he eventually like used the money from the films and converted it into like his own living quarters and stuff.
Wesley Snipes is Miss Piggy.
Yeah. Yeah, he really is. It's perfect. It's perfect. But if you have Netflix and you have even a passing, interest in like biographical films that just make you feel good by the end of it. It's funny. There's a lot of swearing.
It wouldn't be a Rudy Ray Moore movie.
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay, speaking of the genre in which in everything of that man.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of nudity?
His oeuvre.
There's a bit of nudity.
There's a little bit of nudity.
There's enough. It's, yeah. I wouldn't say tasteful, but it's there.
I was just, so like his like the actual films.
Yeah,
there's probably more nudity in a Dolomite movie than there is in this movie.
But I mean it wouldn't be true to the source material if there wasn't.
That's why I was asking.
The scene when they shoot the sex scene in the movie is hilarious.
That's great. It's super good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And oh, I liked at the end with the what reminded me of the you and me of the Disaster Artist. How at the end they rolled some shots of the Dolomite movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, and it was really shot for shot, some of the scenes that they did.
See, that's
for
like
this.
That's like my great. Favorite thing when they do like a kind of like a behind the scenes semi mockumentary on things.
Mm-hmm.
When they like line it up almost exactly,
yeah.
Like with the original work.
That was 80% of what the Disaster Artist was.
Yeah,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I like that movie, but it doesn't have the heart that this movie does.
It doesn't, and that's because it was a James Franco picture.
It was too much James Franco yucking around with his mm-hmm. celebrity buddies, and it felt like it was a little bit at Wiseau's expense. In a not cool way.
Yeah, they were poking fun at Wiseau a little bit, and
which is
and
weird.
They're not poking fun at
because James Franco like really loves The Room and uses every chance he get to show people The Room.
Yeah,
you think he would have been a little more honorific of it, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, it's hard to. He's such a weird guy, anyway. Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess it would be hard to not kind of make fun of him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But no, seriously,
it's not mean to Wiseau, but
it's not.
I think they could have
done it better.
More heart to
it. It was missing the heart that Ed Wood and Dolomite Is My Name definitely has. And so yeah, if you have Netflix,
handle a hard R.
Yeah, and that's what it is.
A boob.
You can handle a boob and a couple
F-bombs. Yeah. I would highly recommend it. It is a trip. It's hilarious. Okay, so I actually did a bunch of stuff. So I'm actually cutting out a lot of the stuff that I was going to talk about. So Halloween was a couple weeks ago, and I mean, I know you guys have a couple of scary movies, right?
I got one. Kinda.
You got one.
Oh, we watched
I got
Hereditary.
One, and you got Hereditary. Okay.
Heredity. Is it Heredity or Hereditary?
I think it's Hereditary.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's
Hereditary.
It yeah. You know, I'll do mine real quick, and then you guys can talk about yours. And so I watched a bad movie called Rock and Roll Nightmare.
that sounds really familiar.
We very well may have watched it. It's a riff tracks. They did a riff tracks of it. So it is basically the story of this.
That tells you everything you need to know. They did a riff tracks.
Yeah, it's a bad movie, but there's a reason why it's a bad movie. So the whole story is this 80s hair metal band goes out to this secluded country cabin, which is by a highway because that's where they could film it. to like record their first album because the barn has been converted into a recording studio and you know, demons and monsters pop up and start taking out the band one by one, and it is laughably bad, and at points it's almost a straight up comedy. And like you're going through the movie going, oh man, this is just this is a slog, this is terrible, until the last 10 minutes when you find out that was entirely on purpose. Because the lead of the okay, so it gets down to the very end, and I'm a little scatterbrained on this. The movie was starring and partially written by a actual 80s metal guy named John Michael Thor. His real name is John Michael Thor. He was a former Mr. Canadian like bodybuilder who got into doing metal, and his whole stage shtick was like he wears like medieval cosplay and fights monsters on stage,
like a guar,
kind of like a
situation.
Guar, a proto guar. So it gets down to the very end, John Michael Thor, because who cares what his actual character in the movie's name is? He's John Michael Thor, is the only one left, and like the head monster, the head demon, Bub. They just call him Bub because he's Beelzebub. But like they just call him Bub. He goes, shows up and goes, "You're the only one left, and we're gonna take your soul." He goes, "No, no, you haven't killed anyone. I am an angel, and I've created all these people to draw you out." And then he turns into a hair metal angel and starts fighting this giant puppet for the last 10 minutes. And the whole point of the movie is that it was a bad horror movie on purpose as a ruse to draw out the devil so that this heavy metal bodybuilder man could punch a puppet for 10 minutes. It was amazing and horrible, and I love it. It's everything that I want from bad horror movies. It's
It's amazing. The twist is just outstanding. And it's, you know, both purposely bad and also unintentionally bad, like a Dolomite movie, kind of.
Wow. So I just looked up this John Michael Thor guy.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, show him.
Let me see. Oh, yep. That's about what I pictured.
Yeah, that's about it. Yep. All right. So, but that was it. Rock and Roll Nightmare. You can find it online for like $1. I actually think it's on Amazon Prime. Yeah,
I think you can get the riff tracks on Amazon Prime too.
Yeah.
Which now I kind of want to watch.
He looks like he'd be a part of like Manowar something like that.
Yeah. But no, it's pretty great.
I kind of like Manowar though.
There's actually a documentary that I haven't been able to find called I Am Thor, which is about how he got screwed up. He was, you know, doing touring in the 80s and got screwed over by his manager and lost all of his money and tried to come back in 2012 or 2013 after he like gained 200 pounds. And like he's now this dumpy guy trying to relive his stuff.
Heyday.
Like one of his shticks back from the 80s was that he would bend a steel bar with his teeth on stage.
Wow.
And like he would take hot water bottles, like the hard thick rubber ones, and blow them up and explode them just by blowing into them on stage.
Man, I remember when I was a kid, I remember some guys coming to my school and doing like a thing like that. Like,
yeah.
Like tearing like phone books in half.
But they did, they did it for Jesus.
Yeah.
I remember those guys.
I can't remember if it was like a religious thing, but I remember like it was supposed to be like a motivational thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is the documentary is this guy going back out on tour.
Okay.
And trying to do some of this stuff and like going to clubs where there's like 12 people there and like, but you know, kind of an underdog kind of story.
Yeah.
But I have been able to find it. I've been wanting to find it.
Talk about Hereditary real quick. We can't really say it's one of those movies where you can't talk about it without spoiling it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, yeah, talk about yours because yours kind of connects to mine.
Okay. But it is so good and so scary and so real and so raw. Yeah,
it takes a turn, like maybe 15
it was made by
in.
The same guy who made the Witch, right?
No. Yeah. And it's hard to talk about without spoiling.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Literally.
But you
like,
would recommend it?
Oh, yes.
Well, I mean, not if you're squeamish.
Oh, yeah. Definitely not if you're squeamish. Like,
if you don't like horror movies, no.
And the acting is so good that
that's part of it.
It feels real. Like, the people react to situations in realistic ways, which is not something you see in a lot of horror movies. And it's about grief and family issues and just see this
okay,
movie.
Yeah, like, gotcha.
It was the one we rounded out. We watched it on Halloween and it was
nice,
perfect.
Nice. Perfect.
Like really sliding into home base on that one.
Yeah. So I'm like, I want to watch a good one and I know this one is going to be good. And it was
good.
So I watched a horror movie, kind of call it a horror movie. I mean, it kind of is called The Lighthouse.
I read about what goes on in The Lighthouse and
it involves mermaids.
Yeah.
Well, sort of.
Think about those beans, huh?
So, The Lighthouse is a movie, and it actually is the second movie sort of based on the same incident, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
The other movie was also called The Lighthouse, and that came out in 2016.
Mm.
But this movie was made by the people who made The Witch.
Which is a very good movie.
Or
also.
The Vitch.
The Vitch.
This movie is, it's a horror movie, but it's more of like a psychological kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
It's all done in black and white. It's actually shot with old equipment on old film. It's shot with a certain lens, like an old style lens that actually makes the whole movie go square. Like it's
it does 4:3?
Yeah, it's not a white, and it was shot on a 30 millimeter film.
35 millimeter?
Well, I want to pay less for the ticket if it's not going to fill the whole screen. paid for 16:9.
Like everything's black and white. It has like this old feel to it, but it's not an old movie.
Right. Well, this is the one with Willem Dafoe
and Robert Pattinson.
And Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got Green Goblin.
It's got Green Goblin
White
and
House.
Batman in it. Yeah. The acting in it is really, really good.
Sure. With both of those actors, I don't doubt it.
They're both good actors.
Like, I think this definitely, in my mind, definitely pulls Robert Pattinson away from like other roles he may have been known for.
That guy gets a bad rap.
He really does.
Twilight, just because he's in Twilight.
Like, listen, Twilight sucked, but like everything else
he's been fine.
He
hates that movie.
And you know what? He knew he was going to be in a bad movie. Sometimes you got to do a thing for a paycheck.
And he would badmouth it in interviews.
Oh, yeah,
and stuff.
He hated it.
He was not shy about it.
Oh, he mercilessly mocked that vampire baby from the last one.
Also, Kristen Stewart gets the same crap.
She gets the same crap, but she's fine. Yeah. She's a good actress.
She can be good.
She can be good given the correct role. And if she cares about the role that she is in. Like this Charlie's Angels.
She looks fantastic in Charlie's Angels.
Yeah. Honestly, it almost feels like they're two separate people, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, it's because she's allowed to be herself in the Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
So anyway, The Lighthouse. It feels weird. The music's on point. All the sound is on point. Like, if you like old, like, style films, it definitely feels something like that. It's a very gross movie.
It gets weird.
It gets weird, but also it's just gross.
Uh-huh.
It's set in, like, I want to say, like, turn of the century, kind of, like.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it's like late 1800s, early 1900s kind of thing. The actual incident is kind of based on, I want to say it's only kind of, because that incident was completely different than what's in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, William Dafoe and Robert Pattinson are virtually the only characters you see in the film.
See, that's interesting. I like small, like, cast kind of films. I think that's really, you get really interesting, you know, takes and different things when you have a very small, limited cast.
Like there are so many weird things going on in this film. It's like, you can't, like, it's like, like, it's almost like a Lovecraftian style thing without like his short stories that didn't necessarily have monsters in them.
Mm.
Like, you can't tell if it's like
the unknown terror kind of.
It's like is this real? Are they just going crazy? What's the kind of thing going on?
Which does fit in with Hereditary, because a lot of that is like, is there something going on, or is she mentally ill?
Like, there's like a lot of things, and like you kind of get an idea that maybe Robert Pattinson's character is not the most stable person throughout the film, because he's like they kind of pull out things like from his past and whatnot of why he's all the way out here at this remote lighthouse kind of thing. Like, he did a bad thing. It's kind of hard to really talk. Like, again, like with your movie, it's kind of hard to talk about like spoiling all the stuff in it,
all the meaty, juicy bits.
Plus, it's still in theaters, so I mean, people still go see it. Okay, I hate to cut you short, but we're getting close. Final thought, Ed, would you recommend it?
I would definitely recommend it for a watch, but maybe not necessarily wait or maybe go to a theater for it.
Mm.
It's definitely one of those ones where you can watch it anywhere, really, and probably get the same experience out of it.
Okay.
Especially if it's 4:3.
Like, watch your old CRT TV.
Yeah, maybe wait until it comes out on DVD and watch it on a CRT.
It is gross.
Mm-hmm.
There's some disturbing imagery in it. So if it's maybe not your thing, maybe skip out on it.
Yeah, because you'd think a movie about two guys stuck in a lighthouse wouldn't get that nasty. But apparently it
here
does.
We are.
Yeah. Like, William Dafoe's character farts so much in the movie. No, I'm dead serious. I am dead. Like, from the minute like they get into the lighthouse and they meet, it's just like.
All right. Well, hey, with that, let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about some news.
Hey, everybody. We're back. That was Psycho Soldier from the game Psycho Soldier.
Yeah.
The old SNK arcade game. It was the first game to have a song with lyrics in it, I believe.
Yeah, so why did we play that song, Cody?
Because Terry Bogard from Fatal Fury is in Smash Brothers now.
That's right, yeah. That he just came, well, at the recording, we're recording this on Wednesday, he was released today, so he is fresh, super, super fresh. And we talked about his reveal trailer back, was it E3? Or was it, when was it?
It might have been E3.
There was a direct during the summer or late summer.
Something like that. But no, he's finally out, and we got a chance to play him a little bit. I am excited for Terry Bogard in Smash because...
More fighting characters?
More fighting characters. I really like Terry. I like the SNK games.
I mean, you actually have a Terry costume. So.
I do. Yeah.
I've always liked the King of Fighters in Fatal Fury games. I've always preferred them to Street Fighter, honestly.
I see. I like them both for the different things that they do. Yeah. But yeah, I
like the characters for King of Fighters and Fatal Fury better than I do the characters for
I'll give you that. The characters in the SNK games are more stylish.
Yeah.
For sure.
They look cooler and they do cooler stuff.
Yeah.
I remember my first like introduction to like King of Fighters, Fatal Fury was an anime movie I saw once.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they made a couple of those.
Yeah, and it's like one where, like, Terry fights some guy in, like, gold armor or something.
Yes.
Who, like, is a reincarnation or possessed by an old spirit or something.
Yeah, the armor had a ghost in it.
Something like that.
Something. Yeah. Well, they made a couple of Fatal Fury.
I think it might have been the first games, one or something.
Or movies, yeah. But, okay, so Terry Bogard is the main character from the Fatal Fury series.
He's like the Ryu of their series.
He kind of is.
Well, except for the guy that is Ryu.
Except for the guy who is Ryu and... Yeah. But he plays so good. Like, it's so smooth. Like, I mean, of course, he's going to play great in a fighting game because he's a fighting game character.
Does his controls kind of go like how, like, Ryu from Street Fighters is, where it actually is his inputs?
You can put in inputs to get more powerful versions of his special attacks. Yeah. Every, like, attack that he has is referenced from a previous game.
Mm.
Like, everything. So
and he has two side B moves.
Yeah,
that's the only character that has that.
That's kind of the gimmick,
cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it's because his special gimmick is not as great as the
Hero.
Limit Break or the Limit Break or the Hero thing.
The Hero is nuts, though. You're not going to get anything that bonkers, I think, again.
Yeah. What I really liked, because they did a mini Smash Direct prior to the character being released, and Sakurai, the guy who, you know, created Smash Brothers.
The Smash guy.
The Smash Man.
Yeah. He was a big time, you know, development head for a large video game company. And, you know, when he was younger.
For his own company.
Yeah. he spent a lot of time in arcades, and he was like an SNK fighter guy. Like he would regularly be like, you know, in amateur tournaments and stuff. Yeah. Like you could tell how much love and care he put into the character. And like the Smash Direct, he was introducing. Okay, so Smash Brothers is a fighting game, but it's not really like a traditional fighting game. There's a lot of stuff that's missing from like your Street Fighters or your whatever. That's, you know, that's not in Smash.
Yeah, and rules wise, it's closer to like sumo wrestling. You gotta knock the other player out of the arena to win.
Right, but like Sakurai spent like a good chunk of the 45-minute presentation like explaining various fighting game like mechanics to Smash players who have probably never heard of any of this stuff. Like he talks about invincibility frames in this move canceling. Like he took everyone to school a little bit in this, and it was fantastic.
I know you hate anime, but you should really watch High Score Girl.
I probably should.
They talk a lot about that kind of stuff in that show.
Probably should. But it was great. The only thing, these aren't really complaints because I'm super pumped and stoked for this character, but I wish they would have put a little more care into like put an alternate costume because one thing with the SNK characters, I mean, the costumes change, you know, because there is a timeline.
Yes.
And eventually he loses like his red vest and ball cap and he gets just a really cool bomber jacket. And I was kind of hoping that at least one or two of his versions would have that as like a alternate character.
Yeah, I was hoping that his final Smash was going to pull in other characters in kind of like a Mega Man.
Yeah,
final
because
Smash
I mean his team is Andy Bogard and Joe Higashi.
Yeah, they so should have like, showed up.
I mean they do kind of show up in the SNK stage,
which is a really cool stage.
I like the
mechanics
stage a lot.
To it. There's invisible walls that you have to break before you can knock the other player out of the stage.
Which is also a reference to Art of Fighting or King of Fighters. Is that 98 or 2000 or something like that? So one of them.
One of them had
invisible walls on the side so you can do wall bounces and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of side characters that show up in the background and have little animations, except for one.
Except for one.
Glaring omission.
Yeah.
My Shiranui. Is apparently too hot for Super Smash Brothers.
Hey, listen, this is a game for good boys and girls.
Yes, you don't need your skinty-clad ninja girl.
I mean, she invented the video game boob bounce.
Yeah, she did.
She is patient zero for that games.
Yeah, and like I understand that they were kind of in a position where they either included the character without the bounce
or they did not include it at all. And I don't want to talk about this too much because it's starting to feel real gross. But like
the main point is if they would have put her in, it would have knocked them from an E10 to a teen rating.
Probably. Yeah.
Or they wouldn't have put it in and people would have been upset because that's kind of her gimmick.
Yeah. So I can see them being like, okay, we're just going to just circumvent the issue completely and just go, eh, she didn't make it.
She's really short. She's just in the background.
Yeah, that's it. But along with the stage and the character, they added a bunch of music. Like
more music than they have for anybody, even the Belmonts, who had a lot of music. Like more than that.
Yeah. I guess the story is Sakurai went to SNK and said, okay, here's a list of 50 songs. Take your pick. He was expecting maybe like they would pick 10 of the songs to be included. And SNK came back to him and said, all right, yeah, sure. 50. Sounds good. And gave them the rights to like do remixes of like all of them.
And not even all of them are from Fatal Fury of King of Fighters. Well, yeah, there's some Metal Slug one.
There's Metal Slug. The Athena one. That's the one that we played.
Yeah, the Psycho Soldier.
Like just super. They took so much time with this and it's wonderful. It makes me really stoked for the last one in this pack. The other thing I wish they would do is I wish they would add like more the trophy fighters, because Joe Higashi would have been a perfect trophy fighter to pop out and do the flying knee and the hurricane upper.
He could have did the same thing that Knuckle Joe does, the Kirby guy.
Yeah,
they could have just remodeled. They could have done that model on that.
They could have had Geese come in and do a Raging Storm or a double Rapuken.
Geese Howard.
Yeah.
Or just fall off the side of the stage.
And do nothing. Predictable. I love that they use old, like they didn't re-record the voice actor for Terry. They used the clips from like, there's some clips that go back to like 95 in this. And it's like his broken English, like
Busta Wolf.
Are you okay?
Hey, come on. Let's go.
That's like one of the things I love about old fighting games that came to America.
It's great. Yeah.
I really wish they would have announced another character, but they didn't.
Yeah, but that's okay. They're probably going to wait for the Game Awards
usually has at least one thing for the Game Awards.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that's probably what they're going to do. So, but that's fine.
We're due for a Nintendo Direct pretty soon too. As soon as Pokemon is out the door.
Yeah,
because they don't have anything really to get you psyched up for after Pokemon comes out, so they'll do some announcements then.
Luigi's Mansion's out.
I mean, the next big thing is Animal Crossing, and that's not till March.
Yeah.
So
they gotta have something for the holiday season, because that's when they make their bank.
Yeah, comes out the same time as Doom Eternal, it turns out.
Yeah.
What?
When Doom got delayed, it got delayed till Animal Crossing's release date.
Oof, I guess two things are going to die that day.
Hey, cross-promotional DLC, you get little tiny Doom guy.
That'd be awesome, a Doom Marine costume for your Animal Crossing
that
villager.
That would be super good. Or no, just like a villager, just like a random villager that shows up and it's Doom guy and he's just super aggro.
Or a Kako demon.
There we go. Just a little floating. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Like, I'm picturing Doom guy like in Animal Crossing and it's not pretty.
I'm picturing this little chibi version of Doom guy and it's amazing.
Yeah. See, he's not violent. He's just like very mad.
See, my brain went violent.
Well, of course. No, listen, Animal Crossing is for good boys and girls.
Doom is not.
Doom is not. Oh, hey, speaking of Pokemon, we mentioned it. There is actually a little bit of news about the new Pokemon game. It comes out in less than 2 weeks. Like, it's actually a week from Friday. Like,
yeah.
By the time you're hearing this, it's going to be less than a week.
It's soon.
And there have been leaks galore about Pokemon that are going to be in it. And I mean, I feel kind of bad for Game Freak because like all of their surprises are kind of being, you know, released without their say so. And it feels kind of grody.
And I don't want to spoil anything on here, but I do kind of want to say I saw the evolutions for the starters.
Yeah, I don't.
And aside from one of them, the other two are bad.
One is patently way better than the other two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably going to pick one of the other ones because, you know.
I already said I was going to go with the one I'm going to go with,
I'm sticking with the one that I wanted to stick with as well.
I mean, but I was like, Grookey day one, and that's where I'm going.
Yeah, well, I think one of us just won.
Yeah.
Josh. But no, the news I wanted to talk about. So they leaked amongst, you know, all the new ones, a list of previously released Pokemon.
Now, granted, this is all supposedly. This is nothing official from Game
Freak.
Nothing
official from Game Freak. But apparently, we knew they were going to remove some of the older Pokemon from the game. And, you know, when you have like over 800 before the start of this one. Yeah, I can understand.
There's a lot.
However, I was not expecting them to remove like 500.
Yeah, they like Thanos snapped all the Pokemon.
They took out more than they kept in.
Yeah. Ash, I don't feel so good.
Yeah. And like, I was kind of bummed out when the news broke a week ago, but I'm kind of coming around. It's like, okay, that's fine. Yeah. If you want your Pokemon, you can go back and play any of the other games. They're all readily available. And
plus, the amount of Pokemon they do have in the game is about the same as any other game.
Yeah, and it's not like they aren't going to eventually port the old games to the Switch.
Oh, yeah, they will.
Like, it absolutely will. And honestly, I know Game Freak said that they're not going to do DLC and, like, patch in other things. You know they're going to.
Or they'll release Pokemon the third. Actually, they haven't been doing third ones, so maybe not.
Right.
Never mind.
Yeah. What I think they might do is, if they eventually like go, okay, we're going to put red and blue, or red and green, or red and yellow, whatever.
Yeah.
Onto the Switch.
Well, they currently already did that with Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee.
Yeah. Right. But like, if they go, okay, all right, in that case, let's go Silver and Gold. Okay. They're going to put the original Game Boy Silver and Gold onto the Switch. And also, we're adding an update to Sword and Shield so that all of Gen 2 can now be moved over and kind of roll it out that way, so that people can play the older games to catch what they want, their favorites, and then import them into the new game, and it all works eventually. I kind of see them doing something similar to that, but like, out of the box, losing 500, that kind of sucks, but
I bet they had analytics that said people don't actually do this. People don't actually transfer that many of their Pokemon from game to game, so they won't get mad when we take it out. But
see, that
they
makes
did get mad.
The only thing with that I see is they're also with Sword and Shield, they're going to be releasing that. It's like the updated Pokemon Bank.
Yeah,
they're calling
the
it someone else
home.
So what
is
the incentive of putting all of your Pokemon from previous games into Pokemon Home, where you can't backwards transport them out? You can only put them forward if you can't put all of those forward.
That sounds like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing at Game Freak and the Pokemon Company situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to end up, and I mean, I was surprised at some of the ones that they removed. Like,
oh yeah,
Bulbasaur and Squirtle are not included in this new game.
No starters are, except for Charizard, and Charmander.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
Like, my thing is, like, there are a lot of Pokemon, and you know what? There's a very small fraction of Pokemon I actually care about. I mean, I'm going to be completely honest.
They kept most of the ones you would expect.
They kept a lot of the ones you expect.
I don't know. Bulbasaur and Squirtle both have huge fan followings.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really surprised. I figured most of the original 150 would be in the game, and they're not.
Mewtwo's not included in this, which is weird.
Who is a huge fan favorite.
Yeah.
It's just like people are like, I want to be the fan of the most powerful one because he's the strongest.
Yeah. but it's just weird, and I think they're going to reverse their decision on.
I'm sure
it's going to be a tiered rollout.
They're going to do something.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, there's no worth putting the energy in to get mad about it if this is a true thing, because eventually things are just going to catch up. It's just the way Pokemon has always been.
I don't think I ever transferred a Pokemon between two generations, except for maybe like the original games to Gold and Silver, just to see it happen.
Oh, no, I've done it.
I don't think I ever have.
Oh, yeah. I was a big fan of the Pokemon Home system because... X
bank.
And Bank, yeah. I mean, in X and Y, I did it.
Yeah, I remember.
I did the thing. I caught them all.
Yeah, you,
I did
you,
the point of the game. It's kind of hard to catch them all when you can't catch them all.
You can catch them all
that are in the game. Yeah, that's the caveat. Yeah.
I mean, there's still like over 400 in there. Like, you still got your work cut out for
you. I mean, and I'm going to do it. I mean, I'm a maniac. I'm going to do
I,
it.
I need that long meowth.
That long boy. It's so good.
But I've seen people online be like, well, just take out the Dynamaxing and put the other Pokemon in because we don't want that. It's like, that's not how it
works. That's not how it works.
That's not how game...
There always has to be the new mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Well, that in a game mechanic doesn't equal 500 Pokemon.
Yeah, it just doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
Programming does not work that way.
Yeah. I'm so sick of hearing people be backseat game designers over this. It's like, you don't know. You have no idea what it's like.
Have some little thing break everything.
Yeah. Well, we moved the models over from the 3DS, and all of them have huge vertices that point out a million miles into the background, and we don't know why. Like, you know, there was a ton of that stuff.
Pokemon T-Pose Quest.
Yeah.
Just everybody just, you know, arms out, static shot.
There's no way that they all just would easily transfer over.
Oh, no.
That's not how things
That's
work.
That's not how it works.
That's not how technology and code works.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll get. That's how you get more missing.
Yeah, they all look like missing now. Let's hit BlizzCon real quick while we're in video game land.
Let's hit BlizzCon. Yeah,
that was last week was BlizzCon, and they announced some stuff and did some I'm sorrys.
Some half-hearted I'm sorrys.
Yeah,
yeah.
We didn't cover this on the show because it's kind of a tough situation.
Politics pretty hard, and we don't usually get into that as much on this. We try not to.
But they banned and took the prize money away from a Hearthstone player.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were pro-Hong Kong democracy.
Protest. Yes.
And Blizzard has a lot of interest in China.
Yeah.
So...
icky.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it gets real...
It gets real rough after that.
It gets real weird.
Like,
and
there was like... all kinds of things, like people who work for Blizzard were up and like resigning, and it was just a mess.
It's a mess. And I mean, if you want to dig into that, there's plenty of articles online that go into it in way more detail than we could ever. I mean, we could devote an entire show to discussing this, and I don't think by the end of it we would be any clearer on, on the topic, honestly.
It's a big dour mess.
Yeah, but anyway, so BlizzCon, what were some of the things that came out from that?
Only John Blizzard came out and said, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then after that, they announced Diablo 4 is a thing.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
with a trailer.
Yeah, I didn't watch the trailer.
It's a very long cinematic trailer.
So
I mean, it's what Blizzard does, but I mean, it's not bad. It looks interesting.
I know they're going back to the darker look away from the what Diablo 3 looked like.
I mean, the way Diablo, like this, the universe in a whole as it is, it needs to be a dark gothic look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Diablo 3 was that bright, honestly.
It really wasn't, but compared to like Diablo 2.
It was a little more cartoony.
Yeah.
Kind of like World of Warcraft kind of has that pseudo cartoony look
to
it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of information. Like, I mean, they kind of talked about some of the things they're going to do in Diablo 4, but...
They basically had to announce it because last year they announced that... they only announced that mobile game and
everyone got upset. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were some of the other things they announced?
Overwatch 2 is the thing.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of excited for Overwatch 2.
Yeah. I'd be lying if I wasn't stoked because it's mostly PvE stuff where you play against hordes of computer-controlled robots.
Yeah, there's like an actual like story.
And that I like that better than playing against real people, to be
sure,
honest.
Sure, but I guess my issue with it is it looks a lot more like it should have been a $20 forced update.
Yeah, like an expansion pack.
And not like a full-blown $60 game.
Some of the things they are changing, and because some of it is going to dial back to Overwatch 1. They've said that new heroes and game modes will be available in Overwatch 1. But I think a lot of the story stuff is going to be in Overwatch 2.
Yeah, and
still,
all the PvP stuff, you'll still be able to do in Overwatch 1.
Yeah, they're still supporting Overwatch 1 even after Overwatch 2 comes out.
Yeah, but I still think that they would, again, I don't
want
to backseat.
I mean,
you're not
game dev, but
everything I've heard about what Overwatch 2 offers does sound like an expansion pack.
It's Overwatch 1 with a new hat.
Yeah.
I mean, basically.
Yeah.
But they haven't said how much it's going to cost.
This is true.
If it's the price of a full game, they're out of their minds.
Honestly, I wouldn't pay $60 for regular Overwatch.
Yeah.
Even though I did when it came out, but
I mean, I did too. But yeah. I don't know. Like some of the things like I've picked up from the various things they've talked about with Overwatch 2. Like Overwatch 1 kind of basically like sets out the this is kind of what happened. Overwatch 2 is going to be more like this is what happened, and then here's the time jump.
Yeah, it feels like Overwatch 1, every story beat that it had was in the past.
Yes, everything in Overwatch 1 is the past, and what little bits of what is kind of what happened with Overwatch kind of trying to reform itself, basically. And then Overwatch 2 is going to be Overwatch is back, and then dealing with, the, you know, there are multiple enemy factions that you're going to be playing against.
Like the cinematic trailer that I did watch this one for Overwatch. It seems like, oh, there's two. I watched the one where they're fighting robots in Paris.
Yes, that's the main one.
Yeah. It very much seemed like it could have taken place right after the cinematic that plays when you turn Overwatch 1 on.
I mean, yeah. Basically, it's kind of catching up to where the second Omnic Crisis is. Because, I mean, I could talk all day about the lore of Overwatch, but...
Yeah, we can't stay on this topic much.
They gave everybody new haircuts.
Yep, yeah. A lot of new looks.
Tracer's got some new pants.
Yeah, Tracer's got new pants. Genji wears clothes.
Yeah, he's not a nude robot man anymore.
Mercy's got a new haircut, and then they showed two new characters, which one character they've already teased in a previous cinematic.
It was Echo. It's like this weird robot.
Yep, she's another Omnic character. Who is affiliated with Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, more robots, but...
And Sojourn, who is the black lady we were talking about two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yeah.
Has been missing from Overwatch.
Yep. Yeah.
Don't know anything about her, other than she has a robot arm and might possibly be like a Canadian medic.
And white hair.
With white hair,
yes.
Yep.
Honestly, I didn't think her design was like all that cool.
But also...
It wasn't bad.
But also, it goes by so fast, you really don't get a full grasp of what... Yeah. What's going on.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see more. It seemed like everything that was in the Overwatch 2 leak is pretty much confirmed.
All right. Well, hey, let's try to get one more news thing in here that's not game stuff.
Fallout 76.
Yeah, no, Fallout 76 is bad. It's, again, but that's all we need to talk about.
Yeah,
it's
bad
again.
Thing happened again, so you can reset your timer.
Reset the clock. You want to talk about the Spider-Verse thing? We could talk about that for
a minute.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so they released a very, very, very brief teaser trailer for Spider-Verse 2. That's going to happen in, was it 2020 or 2021?
2020.
I thought it was 2022.
Maybe I don't know.
No, it's 2020.
2020.
It's 2020.
Yeah, but they're working on it, and that's great. And they're going to be adding more Spider-Mans.
Because the first one's so good.
It is.
Yes, it's amazing. And I am super excited because it is all but confirmed that... Toei's Spider-Man, the emissary of hell.
The Japanese Spider-Man.
Japanese Spider-Man with his giant fighting robot Leopardon, the leopard robot, is going to be included.
Hey,
and I'm so excited.
Hey, guess what? The Spider-Man that basically created the modern Power Rangers.
Yeah, the Spider-Man that's Power Rangers is going to be in Enter the Spider-Verse 2, and I'm so stoked.
That was like one of the best things of the Spider-Verse comics when it originally came out.
Yeah.
Between Spider-Gwen and Sue Spider-Man, that's it right there.
Yep. But
it's so weird that American comics is the genesis of Super Sentai.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, Sentai existed before.
It all ties together.
It's very weird.
But I just hope as much love goes into Spider-Verse 2 as Spider-Verse 1 did.
Yes.
Because Spider-Verse 1 is so amazing.
They almost
have to put
love and care into it.
It's definitely like a... It's a high pedestal.
Yeah.
Like the movie was great, the animation, the music, everything. It is a literal animated masterpiece.
Okay.
Yeah. If it didn't win the Oscar that year, which it did, I would have rioted in the streets.
All right. So what real quick, because we're running out of time, what other Spider-Folk do you want to see in this?
You know they're going to put, was that Spider-Man 2099?
Yeah, that's Oscar Isaac.
Yeah,
was
he's
the voice.
Definitely going to be
Was teased at the end of the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Miguel is his character.
Will they put cartoon Spider-Man's, was it 70s Spider-Man animated?
Yeah. The 60s Spider-Man and the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, the two different animated ones.
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool, yeah.
Is that the one with Iceman?
That's the one with Iceman.
Yeah.
That and sounded fire, a lot like...
Firestar.
Yeah, yeah. That sounded a lot like Fred from Scooby-Doo, because yeah. it's Fred yeah. from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
The incredibly talented Frank Welker.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Dude, I love Frank Welker.
Oh, yeah.
But mostly his Megatron.
Yeah. I kind of want to see the Captain Britain version of Spider-Man.
Yeah. One of them.
Yeah. There's a couple.
There's a new one in the comics now.
Spider-Punk.
Oh, yeah. Put Spider-Punk in it.
Yeah.
Spider-Punk would be neat. I would honestly like to see Superior Spider-Man.
Oh, with the Doc Ock version?
Can we get yeah. Silk in there? Well, they are doing a female Spider-Man's movie.
They are.
Spider-Woman's.
Yeah. I want to see Spider-Man. Who was a one-off joke.
His, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, his Peter Parker's consciousness was put into a bunch of spiders that wore a Spider-Man suit.
Yeah.
And he just, like, shambled around and, like, spiders would fly out. He'd, like,
oh, well,
hit his wedge shooters and just a bunch of spiders would shoot out.
I mean, as far as going back to, like, the Spider-Verse comics,
mm-hmm.
I mean...
There's a million.
There are a million characters to pop up. I'm trying to think of, like, the big, big main ones. Captain Britain, Spider-Man... Was one of Spider-Man UK.
Spider-Man UK.
Yeah. Was one of them. I remember Spider-Man India popped
Spider-Man
up.
Spider-Man
like,
India.
Popped up
good.
For like a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's get a real crinkly Aunt May in there. Just like the real old one.
Yeah. you know what would be great if they did a...
Ben Parker?
Ben Parker would be good. If they did a very brief like Who Framed Roger Rabbit kind of shot and get Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Like
or,
have...
What was this awful Aunt May spinoff? Trouble? Is that what it was called?
Oh, no. Don't. I do not want Trouble in there. That is a bad comic. And you should feel bad for bringing it up.
I'm sorry. I brought Trouble into this.
Yeah.
Oh.
You leave Trouble out of Spider-Verse.
I remember seeing those covers in Hobby Central when they were new a million years ago and being like, what the heck is
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
Or back when Doc Ock tried to marry Aunt May.
Oh, comic strip Spider-Man.
That'd be good.
That like, would be really good.
I don't
good.
Know. I would feel like it'd be kind of hard, given the time frame of the film and everything, to just not make it too bloated with various Spider-Men.
No, see, I think put a million Spider-Mans
the more
in there.
Spider-Mans, the better.
Oops, all Spider-Mans.
Do you think they'll actually get into like the Inheritors? Like
no, because that is convoluted and of a very comic booky plot. They're yeah. going to come up with something better. But no, I am excited for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2. I hope they keep Miles as the focus.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He
with
needs,
everything
to, be
else,
the, he needs
really
to be
does.
The focus.
Are
the, yeah.
I mean, they could work the Venoms and the Carnages and the symbiotes.
They could
there.
Do
they
that.
They didn't touch that
that's,
in the
Yeah,
other
but that's kind of hard, though, because the they just had the Venomverse not that long ago.
Mm.
Where you had a bunch of Venoms and symbioted oh. characters.
Yeah, this yeah, is
whatever.
Its own separate
it's its own thing.
Universe.
Yeah. yeah. So yeah,
they could get Tom Hardy in that too.
Yeah,
you know,
why not? Put everyone in. What the heck? Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we have hit time, so let's go ahead and wrap things up. You've been listening to Nerd Overload. Thank you very much for tuning in. You can find us each and every day over at nerdoverload.com.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and Instagram at Nerd Overload Now.
You can email us at staff@nerdoverload.com.
Get your parents' permission to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Nerd Overload TV.
That's right, and we're also on various podcast catchers like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/nerdoverloadnow. If you like the show and you want to help support us, head on over there and check that out. You can get the show a couple days early, which is pretty cool.
Check out our website. There's somebody wrote a review of Super Monkey Ball. Banana Blitz.
Yes,
HG.
And it's a really good review. You should check that out. And last, we sell shirts. Yeah, just go to the store link and click that and check out some of our designs. And also, I'd like to thank David Pencil for the use of our intro and outro. You can check out more of his stuff at davidpencil.com. All right, and again, thank you all for tuning in, and we will be back next week.
Peace out.